Juan of Castile was the last monarch to rule solely over the Kingdom of Castile and the last representative of the House of Trastamara before the Habsburgs took over. Her reign lasted from 1504 until her death in 1555, making her the longest reigning monarch of the dynasty. Her lifetime witnessed the unofficial unification of Spain, the European discovery and exploration of America, the Spanish expansion into Mexico and the rest of Central America, the conquest of Peru, and the colonizing of Argentina and Chile. She was also monarch during the first successful circumnavigation of the world, and the country she ruled over rose to become the first global empire in history. And yet, her term as ruler of that nation was marked by a number of peculiarities. First of all, she wasn't slated to be queen and possibly didn't even want to. And yet suddenly she found herself at the head of one of the most powerful nations in Europe. On top of that, even though she was officially queen, the vast majority of the time she was deprived of all power and kept under house arrest. Of her 51 years of reign, 46 were spent basically in confinement. And finally, she has also gone down in history with the unfortunate moniker La Loca, Juana La Loca. It certainly has a ring to it, but it's not the kind of name you necessarily want to be remembered for. She must be one of the most recognizable names in Spanish history, even to those who have little idea of Spanish history, and it has nothing to do with her achievements or failures and everything to do with that name. Yes, Juana la Loca, Joanna the Mad, which is traditionally her name in English. Crazy Jane is what I think sounds better to modern ears. But here's the question. Was she really that bonkers? Was she insane at all? Or has history been unfairly cruel to her? Now, let's face it, the title of this podcast is a bit of a spoiler, but there's more to this history than meets the eye, so let's get down to it and find out just what was going on here. Now, let's establish something from the very beginning. Though many Spanish historical people have had their names anglicized, for the most part, I'm not in favor of that. And the biggest reason is that it confuses listeners, because there are a lot of Henrys and Charleses and Luises in European history. So why bother adding a whole nother set from Spain? Plus, contemporary Spanish names in history are respected. We don't call, for example, the former fascist dictator Francisco Franco, Francis Frank, or the previous king, Juan Carlos I, John Charles. So, unless absolutely necessary, I prefer to use their real names. Anyway, Juana of Castile was born on November 6 in 1479 and was the third child of Fernando and Isabel, the Catholic monarchs of Spanish unification fame and of Columbus fame. They would have a total of five, some of whom would play an important part of European history. Catherine, for example, the younger sister, was the famous Catherine of Aragon, Henry VIII's first wife. There's an example of a name I will stick to because it's so famous, if I were to call her Catalina of Aragon, it would throw people off. But anyway, this situation put Juana third in line to the throne. But Juana was never expected to rule as queen. Her two older siblings, Juan and Isabel, had survived childhood, which was a critical stage for most people at that time. So with two adults ahead of her, her parents looked for other ways to make her useful to the family and the kingdom. And that basically came through marriage. You see, back then, a carefully planned marriage made all the difference, and Juana spent much of her childhood getting ready for this future as a spouse. Isabel, her mother, was a strong-willed, intelligent woman and wanted her daughters to be as prepared in life as possible for a union with a prominent member of European royalty. Juana's education was very complete, and the young woman showed she had the capability of excelling in many of these disciplines. She studied the classical languages and also learned three languages spoken in Spain at the time. She studied law, math, grammar, philosophy, the arts, and many others. She learned to play musical instruments and was apparently quite skilled at them. Part of her education came from the brilliant tutor Beatriz Galindo, known as La Latina. A famous neighborhood in Madrid is named after her, so those were certainly days when teachers got the recognition they deserve. That said, it is also fairly well documented that the relationship between mother and daughter was strained at times. Some of this had to do with what historians consider to be Juana's religious crisis. Isabel was a fervent Catholic at the time when the church was nearly at the height of its power in Spain, its leading state. Like any parent whose way of life is highly religiously motivated, Isabel worked hard to instill her views, values, and morality in her kids with varying results. Juana, probably because of her character and because of her personality, was less inclined to accept everything and sometimes challenged her mother. She sounds like she was a bit of a free thinker and didn't always go along with accepting doctrine. And she also tended to skip going to mass. News from her early years in this respect is somewhat contradictory, with some people claiming she wanted to become a nun, which her mom was not going to accept because her mom wanted her to marry someone important, have babies, and carry on with the dynasty. Others said she was going through a crisis of faith and didn't really have any, and that her mother subjected her to all kinds of techniques, which were basically the equivalent of torture as a way of persuading her. Then there were others who said she was a deeply religious person her whole life, but that her personal views strayed somewhat from traditional Catholic faith and practice. And then there were even those who said that Juana practically spent her final years as a Lutheran. So go figure. What this does tell us is that at times it can be very difficult to get a consistent version of the facts about her life, especially her childhood. Anyway, what we seem to know is that she was a curious child, and to say the very least, and some sources claim she tended to swing emotionally from one mood to the next, sometimes to extremes. As anyone who has worked with children can tell you, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but it can be an indication that something is up. Other than that, there didn't seem to be any indication of madness, so to speak, and certainly not the kind that would merit the nickname crazy. So let's move on in her life and see what else comes up. By 15, Juana was deemed ready for a new stage in her life. She and her brother were to marry siblings from an important family known as the Habsburgs. Both were children of Emperor Maximilian I of the Holy Roman Empire. Juan's bride would be Margaret, the Duchess of Burgundy, and she was in line to be the future Queen of Castile. They married in April of 1497. Juana's future husband was named Felipe, Philip, known as Philip the Handsome. He was the Duke of Burgundy, and he was on his way to becoming the next Holy Roman Emperor. Juana left for Flanders with a huge entourage of 15,000 soldiers and over 100 ships. She arrived in September, and the formal wedding took place on October 20th, 1496. But apparently, they met 2 days before for the first time on October 18th, and were so smitten with each other that they arranged for a priest to marry him that very day, so that they could jump into the sack that very night. The relationship seemed to go well at first, but it didn't take long for Felipe to show signs that he had little intention of being faithful. And he soon had numerous lovers. It was a habit that he wouldn't give up, and it would prove devastating emotionally to to Juana. It was also especially difficult for her since she was so far away from home and was living in a world where life was so different from the one she was familiar with in Castile. So it must have been a terribly difficult moment for her. To complicate matters, two twists of fate would change her life forever. Her brother Juan died rather suddenly in October of 1497 on his way to his sister Isabel's marriage in Portugal. He died in Salamanca. His wife Margaret was pregnant at the time with their first child, who would have become the heir, but 3 months later she gave birth to a stillborn girl. Then came Isabel, who did marry the King of Portugal and did have a baby in August 1498 in the city of Zaragoza. But Isabel died just an hour after giving birth, and her son Miguel would make it just 2 years before dying in July 1500. So four deaths in 2.5 years radically changed the future of Spain. And that's because that meant that Juana suddenly found herself heir apparent to the Castilian crown. It was both a shocking and an exciting turn of events. The couple was asked to return to Castile to assume their new powers, which they did in 1502. Their candidacy was approved in Toledo, and they were declared the Prince and Princess of Asturias. Felipe immediately left for Flanders, and I'm sort of wondering what he was in a hurry for, but Juana had to stay back in Spain until her son Fernando was born in Alcalá de Henares. Then she raced off to Flanders to be with her husband and, let's be honest with ourselves, keep an eye on him. Isabel the Catholic died the following year in 1504, and that left Juana with the job. Now, Juana and Philip didn't immediately go back. She had another baby, but in 1505, they arrived in Castile, and a few months later, she was crowned. On paper, this should have been a simple procedure, but as we have seen throughout the ages, power struggles can take place even when there shouldn't be any. You see, once the job of head of state of one of the fastest rising nations in Europe opened up, all eyes turned to Castile. Fernando II of Aragon, her father, was never king of Castile, his wife was, but he was intent on trying for it. And that was thanks to a loophole in Isabel's final testament, in which she added a clause that pretty much specified that if Juana was not mentally capacitated or was not able to rule Castile, Fernando should take over. So it is worth noting that even her own mother had doubts about her suitability for the job. So, knowing what a sneaky guy Fernando could be, you can pretty much imagine what came next. He was not going to get rid of Juana to begin with. He was going to keep her on board because he knew that she had a lot of support. But he was going to grab the reins and take the power. Remember, this is a man who was greatly admired by Machiavelli in the book The Prince for being the prototype of the ideal statesman. So before Juana had even returned to her native country to officially claim the throne, Fernando was minting coins with his name and Juana's as joint monarchs of Castile, León, and Aragon. The problem was he wasn't the only one interested in being king. Juana's husband, Felipe, the handsome guy who was sleeping around to the point of it being pathological, suddenly realized that he could go from archduke in the Low Countries to head of state of a major kingdom, and the idea certainly appealed to him. And he didn't like the fact Fernando was trying to get involved. He also knows he had a lot of support from the Castilian nobility as spouse of Juana, who was also the rightful heir. So he starts playing up the fact that his wife is a little loopy and really in no shape to handle the role of queen. It's apparently true that she was known to go into fits of rage over his philandering, which is normal, and was also consumed by extreme jealousy. So that seemed to help him fuel this narrative. Fernando realized that he had to back down and come to an agreement. First, there was the Treaty of Salamanca in November of 1505, which declared both Fernando and Felipe as co-regents in Juana's name, as they declared her incapacitated to rule. But Felipe wasn't satisfied with the agreement and demanded full governing powers. Backed by Castile's most important and influential people, he knew he had Fernando backed into a corner, so his father-in-law once again had to give in. This time, it was in the town of Villafafila on June 27, 1506. Now, of course, Juana wasn't given much choice in the matter. No one even bothered to confer with her. But in a certain way, she was just happy her husband was around to join her and was far away from his lovers back in the Low Countries. So it seemed as if the matter was settled. In all fairness, Fernando may have been genuinely concerned about Felipe's true intentions and the welfare of Castile against the interests of Flanders. And Felipe's earliest decisions helped to confirm that fear. He apparently restricted the Castilian nobility's powers a great deal and was eyeing all the treasures that were starting to come into the coffers. Then something incredibly unexpected happened. On September 25th, 1506, just 3 months after taking power, Felipe died in Burgos. The cause of his death has always been somewhat disputed. Some say he got sick after playing a game of haelai and then drinking a glass of cold water, which then resulted in a fever that killed him 10 days later. Others say that the infamous glass of icy cold water was drunk before the game, but with the same result. Many scholars also think it might have been typhoid fever. Then again, the swiftness of his passing amidst the tense political situation suggested to some that he had been poisoned, but that has never been in any way substantiated. The most recent history asserts he was most likely a victim of the bubonic plague, since there was a large outbreak in that region at the time. The problem is Felipe's death could not have come at a better time for Spain, but a worse time for Juana. Despite Felipe's ill treatment of her and his constant sleeping around, she was madly in love with her husband. The loss came as a terrible shock to Juana, as her behavior for the next 18 months or so would suggest. It is during this period of intense grief that the story, dare I say the legend, of Juana la Loca, and I mean la Loca, really began to develop. Much of the most damning evidence concerning her mental health appears during this year and a half of almost endless zigzagging back and forth over the territory of Castile. In theory, Felipe was supposed to be taken to Granada to be buried in the cathedral there. Instead, she went around sort of in circles. First, she went 25 kilometers to Cavia, then 60 kilometers southwest to Torquemada, then 10 kilometers to the south to Hornillos, and then another 40 kilometers to Tórtolas, and then she returned all the way back to this vicinity of Burgos, where she stopped short of the city and set up camp in the town of Arcos, and settles there for months on end. So basically, she just looped around Castile and was no closer to Granada than when she started. She traveled only at night. A spooky funeral march, a slow and deliberate procession with an army of torches to light the way. She never separated from her husband, and lying dead in his coffin, she wept incessantly by his side, and then she would open the coffin and she would kiss his feet and then ask everyone to leave the room so she could caress every part, and by that I mean every part of his body. The casket was not allowed to stay in a convent because those were buildings full of women and she felt threatened by that. And basically, you know, what the hell was going on here? Had she lost her marbles? It certainly looked like it. If there was ever a moment that Fernando, her father, as well as the rest of Castile and historians throughout history could point to and shout, that woman was totally off her rocker, that was it. That was the moment. The question was that really what was happening? Or was there something more to this? And the answer is yes, it definitely looks like it. But I'll tell you more about that in the next episode, so stay tuned. So that'll be all for today's podcast from Brian's Spain Domain. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them with us. We love the feedback. And remember, you can follow us on Spotify, Amazon, and Castos. Or if you wish to support us, check us out on Patreon. Stay safe, stay well, and hasta pronto.